when I the other day I was taking a tally of the work I know that people do just for fun. I came up with the one thing I knew was a lot. I know a lot of lawyers, and we were always hosting these parties for fundraising for people who go to jail, and we think that that's like a worthwhile investment of you know anarchist money or you know sort of popular fundraising, etc. But just as a concept, what if we were doing, because this is what I had this professor who was a former Congolese communist guerrilla, and he was like, I don't understand why anarchists are always obsessed with doing things with no money. It always seems like you want to figure out how you can do it with $8 instead of $1,000. And it hit me. He's like, you know, what if you raised money to send people to become a doctor instead of raising money to get someone out of jail? What if that person, instead of getting them in jail, did something towards the long-term vision and future of building an anarchist, like a vision of some sort of restorative justice, something that would be worthwhile to society rather than constantly raising money for legal fees that you guys seem to be doing? And it's always stuck with me. It's been about 6 years, and I'm like, what if we held a yearly fundraiser to put someone through medical school or help somebody, you know, to open something really vibrant in the community instead of what we seem to always be doing? Just something I've thought about for years now.
It could be, somebody could start some sort of scholarship fund, because I know that most of those things are, you know, also tax-deductible. Mm-hmm. So as long as you have the money to do it, you could also, you know, in the end, it would be pretty much for free, because I know most scholarship funds are tax-deductible.
Go ahead, Tom.
Sure. I'm glad you brought up the concept of popular power, because I think one of the weaknesses of anarchism...
Tom, can you speak up?
Oh, okay.
You want to introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, I'm Tom Wetzel. From San Francisco. From LA originally, but in San Francisco now. Because I think one of the weaknesses of anarchism historically was there was a lot of confusion about power. People say we're against power. But actually, the mass of people, the working class, can't liberate itself without actually creating new structures of power. To run things, to run the society, that's power. And I think the idea of popular power, power that's based on it, we're all equals, self-managed kind of power, I mean, yeah, that's how I think of the replacement for the state and the corporations and so on. But in terms of developing power now, it might be useful to distinguish between like social power that people build through or movements that are engaged in confrontation. So like you were saying about getting ordinary people involved in like struggles in the workplace and elsewhere, where like if you shut down a workplace, that's power, okay? And there, that means ordinary people are exercising power, some power. But it's power that comes about through struggle, through confrontation with the people that have power in this system. But if you just are like running a collective, like a food distribution, a food cooperative or something, you know, that's not really power. That's like collectively managing a resource. But I think that's different than social power. And the point you said about transition to the new society, we have to have things there that can make that transition. Historically, that was part of the whole reason for syndicalism, was you develop a working class movement where we have in all the various workplaces that you know, we have workers organized in revolutionary self-managed, you know, workplace organizations or unions, so that in a transitional situation, they can take over the running of those workplaces and guarantee that we still have food and transportation and public utilities and so on.
Anybody else want to rock the mic? There's like 30 of you out there. Someone's going to come and say Brian?
I guess whenever we, like, I hear, like, these conversations about, like, dual power or, like, counter power. This book came out called A Black Flame, A History of Class Radicalism. What's it called? Politics and Syndicalism, right?
Yeah.
And in that book, you know, they talk a lot about counter power, this idea of, like, you know, yeah, exactly what you guys were talking about, like, you know, infrastructure to actually, you know, counter the hegemonic forces of society as they exist. But the one thing that I think has like plagued anarchism historically, especially in the United States, is the confusion of like, I would say, these counter institutions with like a subculture. Mm-hmm. And I'd be really interested to see what people think about that. Like, I'm not saying I necessarily have a lot to say about it, but I feel like that becomes like a really big issue in creating these counter institutions, is like, how do we turn these institutions not into a like subculture, but actually a mass counter power, a mass dual power. That to me is like, you know, for example, you know, you can even see it like a, you know, like punk rock or something, like is that a counter power or is that subcultural anarchism? And I think subcultural anarchism is like, you know, a plague that needs to be dealt with, or it's going to like destroy any potential for a revolutionary radical movement. So it's like, I don't know, that's a point of discussion I'd be interested in.
You'll get a lot of
arguments
for us. One thing is, I mean, unfortunately, they're actually doing their work today, but the revolutionary autonomous communities in LA is really interesting to me because of that, because it's very much, I mean, I just spent a day with them last year, or was it last, yeah, it was last year, technically, whenever the conference was, the anarchist conference, but just the way that they seem to be doing the work that they're doing in terms of, you know, it's a food program, but it's built on the idea of, like, teaching people how to run a food program, like a mass food program. And I thought it was neat because I said, oh, they said, we don't cook the food because we're not going to be condescending and tell people to cook what you will be cooked for them. We're going to give you the means to cook for yourself. And it's, you know, run, and it's mass run by, like, you know, volunteers who are from the community. Like, I had an amazingly wonderful time with the lack of English speaking, like, because it was, you know, being run by people from their community themselves. And it was really interesting that way because one thing that he was saying was, he's like, we're getting away from this. One of the organizers told me, like, we're getting away from this anarchist thing because it's, you know, white kids that are punks, and we're going to go to this other thing. We're going to start reaching out to the people we're actually working with and start investing our time there. And at this talk in San Francisco, but it was off of this. And as a social worker, like, we tend to figure out, like, just briefly, we have a scale with which we decide how far someone is in terms of changing their behavior. It's called the stages of change. It's a really interesting, simple model. But, you know, if someone's pre-contemplative, they haven't thought about changing anything. If they're contemplative, they're thinking about it. If they're planning, they're planning. If they're in action, they're doing it. And so I'm always amazed that we, as anarchists, will spend so much time with people because they say they're anarchists. They're actually pre-contemplative about actually changing anything. They're not interested in actually changing anything or doing the work to change anything. They're more interested in the title than people who may actually be in, like, a planning. They see problems, they want to make changes, but they don't have tattoos and a crass back patch, so we don't spend an hour with them talking about how we can actually start building towards a world we want to see. And just from a Q&A, like, assessment perspective, like, the state of California Medi-Cal wouldn't pay for the work we do because we waste tons of our resources on people who don't want to see change, or at least who don't act like they want to see any change. Whereas there's tons and tons of people who make very clear enunciations daily that they want to see something change, or that they think there's something wrong and there's some problems, and we just don't spend the time with them to actually start developing political networks and political power. Cap? Speak up.
So I think on that question, the difference between, I'm outside. I think the difference between a canon institution and like a countercultural institution is like, countercultural institutions tend to be like exclusive, right? You tend to be like, okay, these are my people, and then if you don't fit with this, you know, like, while any kind of counter-hegemonic institution or like action, counter, like against the establishment culture needs to be as inclusive as possible. So what are you trying to do when you like try and create this kind of institution? You see something that can actually address the need of most people, like as many people as you can. So I mean, there's the whole classic example of like a union. Like, should a union be, you know, like exclusively like we're gonna embrace these politics, or should it be like, okay, we have a set of principles